Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie. So while Nepal is struggling to dig out of a natural disaster that has brought death and destruction to thousands, Baltimore is overwhelmed by the violent aftershocks of Freddie Gray's death and all that looting. So here with us in Studio 3 is someone who knows about managing both natural and man-made disasters, Homeland Security expert Juliet Kayyem. Juliet is the host of the Security Mom podcast and founder of Kayyem Solutions. Juliet, good to see you.
Thanks for seeing me today. It's a Tuesday.
It is a Tuesday. We're confused, but we'll work it out.
We're going to hear a little bit from that podcast in just a few minutes. But I want to ask you, Ms. Security Mom, what'd you make of how they handled the situation down in Baltimore? They've got the National Guard there now, but there was a lot of craziness going on last night.
Right. So the National Guard is absolutely necessary in a situation like that. You have a city of over, close to 700,000 people. Just to put it in perspective, there's only about 1,000 people out on the streets now. So it's hard to see that. It's bad. I know that it's bad that there's 1,000 people out on the streets, but nonetheless, in the perspective of the city, it's a small, small percentage. And President Obama was right to sort of put that part in perspective. But you absolutely need the National Guard under the governor's authority simply because you have a population to protect. And most of that population is actually African-American and poor. And so I think it was the right move and probably a little bit too late.
Could they have prevented this?
No. Everyone's parsing what the mayor said on Saturday and whether, she sort of was complicit in allowing people to do damage. But then you look at the opposite reaction in Ferguson with the white mayor who didn't do anything. I mean, look, the idea that these kinds of events are about the thing that triggers them, I think, is wrong. It's like saying that the Arab Spring is because a Tunisian fruit stand owner burned himself. I mean, the forces that are going on in Baltimore, Ferguson, are about the criminal justice system. They are about generations of minorities and African Americans whose interaction with the police and with the law enforcement community is one in which you're locked up for life and opportunities closed out to you. And that is why you see the hostility between law enforcement and these communities. And unless we look at the bigger picture about what's going on between law enforcement and our communities, we're going to think that this could have been avoided. It can't be avoided.
Well, first of all, I want to play a little sound and then take issue with you in terms of this mayor. Here's Baltimore Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake speaking on Sunday, and the key line is the last line, which everybody's talking about. Go ahead.
I worked with the police and instructed them to do everything that they could to make sure that the protesters were able to exercise their right to free speech. It's a very delicate balancing act because while we try to make sure that they were protected from the cars and the other, things that were going on, we also gave those who wished to destroy space to do that as well.
Obviously, it's the final line. We also gave those who wished to destroy space to do that as well. And so for the last 24 or 48 hours, every single supporter of the mayor is saying, oh, she left out the word. She meant to say, unfortunately, we have to give space. Let me tell you something. This is as unimpressive a chief executive as I have ever seen. And with all due respect, Juliet, while I totally get the notion, I've heard this a lot on CNN, where I know you work part-time, this notion, would you prefer that she overreact like Ferguson? No, I'd prefer she do something in the middle, which is the same thing. Don't wait till it's too late. Don't militarize your streets too early like Ferguson did. It's almost as if she had no idea what was going on. And then all of a sudden, she deals with a governor with whom apparently she doesn't have a good relationship. It seems to me this thing has been mishandled from A to Z. And when you compare this, I'm sorry, let me ramble for one more second. Last night I heard the lawyer, this KOCH, I don't know how to pronounce her last name, one of the lawyers for Freddie Gray's family, talking about the investigation. You compare the fact that nothing has been released from the investigation so far with what Bill Evans did here with community leaders in the video of the shooting of Officer Moynihan and then subsequently Angela West. It's like night and day.
Right. So, I don't want to rush an investigation that might result in the arrest of police officers who murdered, at least
I totally agree.
So, I am sympathetic with them maybe holding off on it. But could she have done better? Absolutely. Because what I don't get is It is warm, and I know that sounds silly, but weather matters in these things. It is warm, and you had a funeral on a Saturday. Why are we putting the funeral on a Saturday? I have no idea. You put it on a Monday at 11 a.m., so it's on a Saturday. Anyone in public safety would have known that combination with the racial issues and the police issues was a bad combination, and you should have had the National Guard, not the military, right? The National Guard is the military, yes, but it is different, out protecting the communities that need it the most, which are the communities that, this is going on. So I'm with you, but I'm also saying if we spend too much on whether this could have been quelled, because it's not clear even if she had said something different, it could have been quelled. Look, every way that this has been dealt with in these various cities, you know, the white mayor and the white police chief ignoring it, the African-American mayor and the African-American police chief maybe giving too much leeway, or any other combination in between, this is happening not because someone says the wrong thing or whatever. It's happening because of abuse by police against minority populations in the context of a criminal justice system that is putting away generations of Black men.
Of course, most African Americans would probably say that there has been abuse against them for decades.
Yes.
So why now?
Well, I think video. I mean, I think it is the nature of the surveillance that exists today. Not surveillance, the personal capacity to actually take pictures of police officers in ways that it was just he said, she said before.
Okay.
And so, you know, look, without the videos, we would never have known that any of this stuff had happened. And they're not. Most of them are not police videos. So that means, right, that we are going to see in a good way a lot of this abuse going on. But it also means that it gets magnified in ways in which we should anticipate. Every mayor, every governor has to anticipate that when this police brutality happens, something like this, maybe not the rioting like in Baltimore, is likely to occur, and you have to put public safety out in numbers that may seem bigger than necessary, not to abuse, not to terrify, but to protect the citizenry.
You know what's amazing to me is that this may be too broad a generalization, but I'll do it anyway, is that it seems that nobody or virtually nobody is learning from anything that went before. Mm. I mean, as we had this discussion the other day in the context of Freddie Gray, even if the cops had malevolent intent, you would say to themselves, well, likely it is good we're going to be on video. We learned what we saw what happened to Walter Scott. We saw what happened to Tamir Rice in Cleveland, you know, on and on like this, Eric Garner. So you would think they wouldn't do it. Well, they haven't learned any lessons. You'd think the mayors of every city in America are now at some conference saying, hey, Baltimore's coming to my town next week, next month, next year. I want to be prepared. But it essentially is you have a disaster. You wait a week or a month. You have another disaster. You quell that one. Then you wait. It's sort of like, how do we deal with today's disaster rather than any big picture solution to anything?
Well, that's why I sort of push back, you know, on this idea that we can, you know, that Ferguson is one reason, or we can deconstruct what was wrong with Ferguson.
No, you're right about
that. Deconstruct what's wrong with Baltimore. This is. Honestly, this is just about the relationship between these communities and law enforcement. And it's a relationship that Democrats and Republicans have contributed to for decades. And unless states like ours start to change the dynamic, you know, it is we are going to be stuck with this relationship. And so that's my strong felt feelings about looking at all of these.
We're talking to Juliette Kayyem, our Homeland Security expert. Let's move on to something else that's kind of depressing in a much different way, though. This story that just under 3 in 10 young people between 17 and 24 can join the Army because they're too fat. And that cops, 40% of cops, according to these different stories, and firefighters and security guards are also obese.
Right.
I mean, it's like insane. These are young people.
I know. Well, obesity is just systemic. So the fact it's going to hit public safety communities or military personnel or recruits is just a reflection of the kind of society that we've built, which is that we're too stationary, that we don't eat well. And that is having a national security and public safety consequence because people can't join the Army. And you have to understand, and this is people in the military are going to get mad at me, but like the Army standards have been sort of going down over the years. Anyway, we don't have conscription. So it's not like we're taking, you know, the Michael Spitzes or the Carl Lewis's. I mean, it is overall.
Mark Spitz.
Yeah, Mark Spitz. Sorry. That was a combination of various athletes. But, you know, so it's a challenge. And part of it is just the stationary activity that is going on in a lot of these, in the societies that we are raising our children in. And it's now the Army's taking notice because we don't have conscription and they need bodies. And,
so why don't they, if you're a law enforcement entity or you're the military and somebody, maybe they do this, and someone applies who, other than the fact that they're out of shape, would be a wonderful candidate. No, I'm saying, I didn't mean that as a joke.
Jim, that's like saying, other than the fact that he can't speak, he's a great radio host. Like, I don't understand.
Okay.
Like,
other than the fact they have the mental temperament, they're tough, they're compassionate, they're whatever, they're smart. Why don't they then say, here's the deal. You're admitted, other than the fact that you're out of shape. You can enter this 3-month program free that we will fund the police force of Baltimore or the military recruitment center.
Why
in
would you do that? You'd
because
tell
they're
them to
not
go back and go
you tell
on
them
a
to
diet
come back
and come back.
Well,
when
obviously
they've lost
they're
30
not
pounds
doing that,
yet.
Are they?
Yeah, but I think you don't want to say we're going to take you even if you're obese.
No, take you subject. No. I don't mean take you
mean,
and hope
can't
that things
go there.
By the way, this you know, I'm the only one in the room, I'm sure, who's been overweight. Is that a safe assumption?
No, I used to be about 40 pounds heavier.
You were?
Yes, that's why I'm a fiend about exercising.
Well, I'm not a fiend about it. I'm a quasi fiend about
exercising. Yeah.
How old were you when you were still heavy?
In my 20s.
Really?
So
yes.
There you go. So she's walked the
so
walk.
Get it together, gentlemen.
I like you more than
together.
I did before. I really, I'm stunned.
That seems impossible to me.
Because Marjorie has never been a pound overweight except.
I know, but standing next to Marjorie. You should join the Army, honey.
I should join the Army. I had a period when I was in college when I used to eat a loaf of bread every night.
No, but let's not explain why you would eat a loaf of bread. I wouldn't get into that if I were you, Marjorie. I know the whole story.
Lots of honey, lots of butter.
Hey,
I thought my stomach was going to burst one night when it was still cooking in my belly.
Okay, fine, Marjorie. Now let's go.
I want to have been in my 20s with Marjorie because they seem much more fun than mine.
A lot of them didn't make it out of their 20s with Marjorie.
It's true.
Oh my God.
Sad state of affairs.
Okay, back to
lucky
a really
I'm still here.
Okay, fine. Back to a really serious thing. Obviously, this disaster, what in the $5,000 person range lives lost in Nepal, the assumption is the number is going to grow exponentially
Absolutely.
Once you get to these all these small communities. From a Homeland Security perspective or preparation perspective, everybody knew something like this was coming, even though this is the worst in decades there. Is the world's response as good as it can be to this not exactly easy to get through kind
so
of place?
I always remind people, like, it's called a disaster for a reason. I mean, it's never going to look that pretty in the first couple of days. And I had to deal with this with Haiti, with some of the challenges of the deployment of...
Which you helped coordinate,
yes,
correct?
And I was coordinating on the receiving end, both the adoption and then the movement of Haitians over here, if they were really, really sick or couldn't be helped. So I just... What you have to remember is, and I agree with you that the number of 5,000 is probably very small, is that... The primary importance now is food and water. And so to the extent that we're worried about the American hikers or the orphans, like just you have to be cold and calculating, but just get that out of your head. What is most important now is logistics and the movement of water and military assets to save as many lives as possible. It is brutal. It is rough. It's the same decisions we had to make in Haiti. You know, you had orphan children and you just have to somewhat ignore them because you have one runway, as we did in Haiti, and you have hundreds of thousands of people who need water. And that is what's going on now. So it seems so this movement, to the extent we can because of logistics, of lots of materials and water, and food and medical supplies is going to take primary importance over the more socially humanitarian efforts like getting children or getting the bodies of Americans who may be dead out. That's just going to have to wait. And it's called triage for a reason. You just have to select what the priorities are. And it's going to look messy for a couple days because you have no infrastructure. I mean, that's just the nature of it. And so we can complain about it or say we should be doing this or that. Just it is, it's called disaster for a reason. And
you know what's, maybe this is not a fair comparison, but since we're standing here, I'll make it anyway, is one of the most remarkable things about the Marathon bombing, which we talk about nonstop, and everybody talks about this aspect, other than the three people who were dead on the scene, not one other person died. Everybody was saved because the medical infrastructure, and obviously we're an exception, downtown Boston, and then you compare that, go 180 degrees, and potentially thousands of people are going to die, not because of the immediate impact of the earthquake.
That child
but
with the appendectomy.
I know, but because of the inability to take care of people.
And that's what happened with the tsunami, is that although we did surge resources there as well, as all these countries did, another 100,000 people died from conditions after the fact. And that is just the inevitable consequence of the kinds of societies that people around the world live in. And there's just no infrastructure for the movement of of things quickly. Look, the large helicopters cannot land in Nepal. They cannot land in Nepal, which means you cannot, you know, you cannot grab 50 people and get them out of there. You're doing 10 people at a time, and that just, you know, that requires more time. It's more dangerous. And so, and then, you know, there's the you know, and so all these countries are trying to help, but there's only so much help that you can give.
Okay, let's go from international disaster and emergency to personal emergencies.
Oh, yeah.
If you haven't checked it out, Juliet Kayyem now is the woman behind the Security Mom podcast, which I have to say is terrific.
Thank you.
Here she is talking about how to prepare your own home and family for an emergency.
Oh.
Listen.
Get some spare water and some dry food for the basement. Get those things your kids are going to want if they're home for a couple days. Batteries and flashlights, of course, but something like Pepto-Bismol really also helped because diarrhea can lead to dehydration. Make copies of you and your family's birth certificates and social security cards, and don't leave them next to the originals. Mail them out of state so that they are far away should something happen to you or your community. It's not that hard. Sit down, make a plan, be prepared.
Okay,
who's playing the music
on,
in the background? That's what I want to
hold
know.
Hold on. Have you done this?
Absolutely. Look at me. What is your... Yes, I've done it.
Wow.
And you haven't? I've
no.
been doing this radio thing for 6 months now.
Make copies of my Social Security card. I have no idea where they are.
Well,
or where
make
they
them have copies and your birth certificate and mail them out of state because, you know, everyone has copies and they have them next to the original just in case something happens
to
your home.
Have you done this?
Mail them out of state, of course.
Yeah.
I've mailed them all. Let me tell you, I know Marjorie again pretty well. Can I tell you what's going to happen? Marjorie's going to go home tonight. She often remembers half of a conversation. Is that a fair statement? Marjorie's going to be packing up her books, her clothes, her children's diplomas. They're all going to be sent to relatives in Nebraska. Is that not what's going
to
happen?
I have to find the birth certificates first is what I have to do.
I mean, the whole point of that was just, I was talking with Michael Chertoff about how you communicate about risk and harm and our children. And it was, we both agree that if you actually take security and your own preparedness into your own hands, it goes far in terms of sort of calming the unease that we may experience from the societies that we live in. And so I just was sort of riffing on, okay, here's what I do. And it's just not that hard. And you sit down with your kids and you make a plan and they all get it. And then it's, the whole thing takes half an hour.
Was that Yanni who was playing the music in the background?
Do you not like the music?
I loved the music,
it was pretty good. Yeah, it was good. And Abby has these incredible cut-ins on this one, including one from SNL that made fun of the color code system, which I had forgotten that segment. But
let me ask you another stupid question.
If they're not stupid.
Why do you need to have your – why are your birth certificates so, and Social Security cards so important?
You mean having a copy of it?
Yeah.
Just think about if something were to happen to your house and you have to restart in terms of identification. You lose your wallet and you lose your sort of primary forms of identification.
Don't you go to town hall and they have another
And how are you going to tell them that you're you? I mean, you have a recognizable voice, so you may get away with it.
Okay.
But, you know, how what piece of paper is going to say it's actually me?
Do they ask you at town hall the name of your first pet? Sometimes you do that in your computer passwords.
You know what I did? I sent to relatives in New Jersey the name of my first pet. That's what I did last night in anticipation of this segment.
No, now you're making
Make a plan. I remember that from 9/11.
Tom Ridge.
Make a kit.
No, it was Tom Ridge who said that.
He
make
said
a kit.
That's
make a
right.
Or I like to say, help us when I was in government, help us help you. In other words, if people like you and me are not calling 911 because we're panicked because the cable's down, then, you know, public safety can be focused on the people who need it the most or the people in impoverished, you know, people who can't help themselves because they don't have the means or the capacity. So it's just a little bit of getting some grip into your own life. And then, you know, the most important thing I have to say, though, is just your kids. If something happens, you're just...
Send your kids out of state, too.
At the end of, at the end of our infamous staycation last week, that was actually a good... I forgot that option.
We know the current Security Mom podcast is former Homeland Security Chief Michael Chertoff. What's next? Do we know yet? Or no?
Yes, Emily Bazelon, who writes about sort of, you know, harassment and bullying.
She wrote
kind
all
of
the stuff about Phoebe Prince, the kid who killed herself in this horrible bullying case in South Hadley, Massachusetts.
Right.
Oh, that'll be
she
great.
She wrote a book. So we're trying to get her on, and then we'll be back in 2 weeks.
Great to see you.
I'll be back next week, though.
Wonderful to talk to you,
we'll
Juliet
We'll be back to our normal Wednesday next week. Talk
you
to
will.
You then.
Boy, I want to be organized like Juliet Kayyem. I really do.
I want to be skinny like you, Marjorie.
All right, the grass is always greener. Juliet Kayyem joins us every week for Open Mic. She's a Homeland Security expert, hosts the Security Mom podcast. She's pretty skinny, too, actually. To hear the Security Mom podcast, go to the iTunes store, search Security Mom podcast, and click subscribe. Or you can go to WGBHnews.org/securitymom. Juliet, great to talk to you. Coming up, it's our Cinema Classic Challenge. We're asking you, does the great 1986 Rob Reiner classic Stand By Me stand the test of time? Garen Daly joins us for that conversation next on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.